Well, I when we were down in Culiacan.
What did you go to Culiacan? Is this around that?
No. I didn't go down there. No, this was when I was doing the Connect. This was like a year and a half ago. This is right before. This was 2 months before they went and got Ovidio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chapo's son. So we got out of there. Looks like we were down there snitching because it was like
we'll get there.
We'll go into that.
But you're moving, you're growing.
Not growing weed, by the way. Just the business is growing.
You're growing your ambition, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And the size of the business.
Making friends.
Mm-hmm.
You're proving your worth, I guess, in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this guy knows. Mm-hmm. This guy's being able, knowing you're not getting into trouble per se. What leads you to that basically getting caught up in that situation that led to
oh, yeah.
the rest of it?
Yeah. Well, so by 2010, it was getting very hard to turn a real profit from wholesaling pounds in the Northwest.
What's affecting everything?
Just oversupply. Yeah. The impending legalization. More people are growing. More people are micro growing, right? Yeah. You know, they're growing. They have a friend who has, you know, 20 plants in his house, right? That saturates the wholesale market.
What effects are you seeing on the guys that used to supply you, the Mexican Connect you had?
Well, they're now starting to come up to Oregon. They're like, we'll meet you, you know, halfway now and stuff like that. So that's a benefit to me.
They're basically they're not getting affected as far as shrinking. They're just growing and expanding in a lot of ways. Yeah, I imagine
they're growing more of it. They're moving more of it, but I think they're getting less profit.
They're
per
just
pound.
They're taking advantage as far as like, oh, everybody's in on this now, and it's probably gonna. You can just hide between the crowd, I guess.
You can
move around more.
Yeah, I mean, they still had a lot of, but again, they had a lot of people that were driving in from all over the country, and they were taking it back to their markets and charging that huge markup.
Yeah.
So I knew, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's how you get rich. Like once I started talking to, you know, my connect when I would go down there to re-up from him. And he'd be like, yeah, this guy came from Texas. He was like, I was gonna hook you up, but this guy came through and he bought all of them up and he took them back to Texas. And I'm like, why the fuck would he do that? And then he was like, well, he'd probably get, you know, $4,000 a pound.
Yeah.
And he's paying $2,000. So you're like, holy shit. So that he's making $200,000 on a run and they're probably already sold, right? By the time
he gets there, everything's gone.
It's like, oh, yeah, I see how this is done. So I'm like, okay, I have to find buyers. The way that I'm going to survive is I have to find buyers in these places where weed is the supply and the quality are still a sliver of what there is
basically,
where I live in the Northwest.
Basically, weed Uber Eats.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that's genius back then, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, to figure out where the need was and the money was to grow into.
Yeah. So, yeah. I had a guy from Montana just on a whim come in and that was the light bulb moment too. Cause I sold him. What he told me he was making when he took him back. I mean, it was like, he's making five times the profit I am, just giving it to him. I can only make $200 markup on a pound. But I'm like, okay, so I need to figure out how I'm going to get it over there. And then what I got, we had a stash house that got raided the end of 2009, which is just where we kept the product. And, you know, it was like it wasn't the feds. It was, you know, the Portland Vice and Drug Squad, you know, just some Boy Scouts, right?
Yeah.
And they took some pounds off of us. They took a couple of grand.
Did you see it on the news? Like the classic, you know. Guy with the rifle and the mask, you know.
Not at all.
No,
not at all. Listen to the fucking how nice it is where I'm from. Even when you get raided, it's kind of pleasant. I was playing golf with my grandfather, and he was in town visiting, and I went. Yeah, exactly. I had a guy on my line, like, "Hey, hurry up, we need you, we need you." You know, I'm on drug dealer time. I'm swinging the golf club with my papa, and I drop him off at my parents' house where he's staying, and then I head straight to the stash. And when I got there, it was, you know, all these unmarked, you know, Jeeps and shit with their lights on. And I'm like, okay. And I tried to give them a little high speed. You know, I put it in reverse, tried to peel out. But they saw me, so they caught up with me and drew down on me and shit. But it wasn't the SWAT team. You don't get raided. In a place like Oregon, there's so much weed traffic. They don't raid with SWAT. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they shouldn't, right? That's fucked up.
Yeah.
But they put a felony on me. You know, obviously they try to get me to tell. They're like, who's your guy? Who's your guy? Who's your guy? You can go home. You can have dinner with your grandpa tonight. We're not even going to take you downtown.
What was the script?
It was like, I'm like, guys, there's no fucking way. And in my mind, I'm like, because I'm not giving up the connect. I need him. Yeah, I need him now more than anything. Yeah. I'm not going to give up my Mexicans.
Yeah, no way.
You know how long it took me to get that connect? So I bailed out. They took me in because I refused to talk. I bailed out. I wasn't like a dick about it. I'm like, guys, I can't help you out. Bonded out, got a good lawyer, you know, first time offender. This is already when weed is half legal. It was only like 5 pounds, right? So I got a suspended sentence. Didn't have to do any time. But I got out. Now I'm on the map because I got a felony now. Now things, if I get popped again, like I'm going down. So that's when I was like, no more. And I was set up by a local distributor who was like, he was our best worker, you know? Like he was picking up pounds every day. He's moving them. And, you know, but he got popped. He used Mark money to go make buys from us at this stash house. And that's how they got a warrant. So I'm like, okay, I need to separate myself. This is when we got to take a chance with the mail. And so that's when, and at the same time, we had finally found those buyers that we needed in, you know, these distant markets that were going to pay that price that we needed. So, one by one, we start experimenting with the mail, mailing drugs through the mail.
Where did that idea come from? I mean,
I've heard
about guns and certain things that shouldn't be sent through the mail being put into the VHS back then. You know, VHS mm-hmm. or DVD players where gun parts and shit like that would be sent. Money, drugs. You would think like, oh, they're checking everything. There's no way anything is going to go through.
Right.
So we
had heard about it while we were in college in the mid early 2000s.
Because that's what you go to college for.
Of course. Learn about logistics. So
yeah,
because we have friends that were going to school in like, you know, Pennsylvania, right? And sometimes one of our buddies would be like, yeah, I mailed Zach an ounce. Just mailed it to him. We were like, wow. Or like a half ounce.
How? Like, were they, you
know, in the mail, like in a box?
Freeze dry.
Well, I'm going to get to that.
Sure.
But that's where I'm like, okay, yeah, you may mail him a half an ounce. Like, you're being very subtle with it. Like, I don't know how you do it, but I'm like, wow. So later on, we were like, okay, can we actually put mail quantity? So it was some trial and error, but yeah, we figured it out, and we had a whole system. So, you know, we have a table, takes up this whole little, we had a little factory line, right?
Yeah.
Say you got to get 20 pounds to New Jersey. You got two different addresses over there, right? And you want to get about 10 pounds. You want to put about 10 pounds in each box. So you can fit about 5 pounds in one big freezer bag. So you can't contaminate anything. So like I had instructions for my guy, a friend of mine from the old neighborhood where I grew up, who was younger than me, and this is during a recession. So he was working for me, right? You empty out the turkey bags where you get each pound, right? So I just brought in 50 from Northern California. He did actually, because he's my driver.
Yeah.
And I'm helping him. We have gloves on. We're dumping out 5 pounds into one gigantic freezer bag, which is a food saver. To restore, you know, food.
Yeah, air doesn't need to go in there or else the food will go bad.
Exactly, exactly. So then you have multiple different heat sealers that compress 5 fluffy pounds down to, God, I don't know, like the size of you know,
medium,
a couple
medium pizza box.
Yes, right? exactly.
It's I've heard. It's by the way, I've heard.
It's unbelievable how well these work. Okay, then you wipe them down with strips, and you do it again. I double vacuum seal it, and you do that again with the other bag, and again, you keep all of your boxing packaging material in a different part of the house because you can't have any kind of contamination whatsoever. And then you simply dress it up. You know, you put bubble wrap over it. You might put in, you don't want to put a bunch of stuff that's too heavy because then your shipping costs go up. So you just kind of try to even out the weight to make sure nothing's shuffling around in the box, probably old clothing, things like that. And then you simply, you know, seal up the boxes. And then this is in the era before you had to show your ID when you dropped these boxes off at FedEx or the post office. Yeah. So you just, I didn't go in there, but you just, you send, you know, I had a hit this, my buddy who was helping me, his girlfriend, we would send to usually FedEx, but the postal annexes, the places, you know, sometimes the USPS was very good for us. And, you know, the next day, and we always, when you send it out, the safest way to do it, especially, and this is the reason why we basically exclusively used FedEx and UPS by the end, is that it's next day air. So it's got to get there by 10 a.m.
So everything's expedited?
Everything is expedited, the most expedited. We pay the most money for the most expedited package. And that way we can track it online every step of the way. So I know that this package has to get to that address in Inglewood, New Jersey, by tomorrow at 10 a.m. If it is not there by 10 a.m. and it gets
pinged
every step of the way, every sorting facility. Now I know it's on the truck being delivered. If it doesn't get there by 10 a.m., that's a dead package. You know, that's a walk away. Do not sign. Do not accept it. If there's any funny business, but it gets there maybe a little late, I tell my guys, don't open it.
Yeah.
Don't open it. Put it to the side and wait.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because now you have some plausible deniability. But it worked like a charm, and we moved, you know, probably 1,000 pounds that way.
It is a beautiful process.
With a 95 to 97% success rate.
Whenever anything got, you know, it pauses its trip across.
Yeah.
Nothing happens. I mean, no, realistically.
The money that came back to me, you know, sometimes through the USPS, the United States mail, that's the government mail. Obviously, it's the least efficient, right? Because it's a government-run thing. It's just not going to compete with FedEx. So I've had money packages that have just completely disappeared from the tracking system months later. And I'm like, wow, I just lost $30,000 just like that, right? Months later, it would show. I remember a package showed up to me finally. It was empty, completely gone. Some motherfucker, some postal worker was taking a vacation. Yeah. Had, I think, one box ripped off like that with a couple of pounds from UPS.
Yeah.
And so I stopped using UPS.
You can't complain.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was, you know, yeah, that enough money was coming in to where one box wasn't going to kill us. So yeah, it was a lot. It was just a little bit of trial and error, but not much.
I imagine that is exponentially making your
of course
money grow.
Of course, we went from, you know, making $2,500 a week to making $50,000 a week.
Where is this money going, or how are you?
I saved a lot of it. And just bought bigger re-ups. I mean, I traveled all over the place, you know.
That's how you were doing your luxury aspect of it, just basically traveling.
I want to go to Manhattan for the weekend. Let me just buy a first class ticket in cash, you know, and I'll just be walking around 24 years old, staying at, you know, in a suite in the Trump Hotel, Trump Tower, walking around with like $40,000 in my pocket. Like, that was enough for me, you know? That's crazy. That's crazy.
It's insane.
I'm 24, barely.
So are you even planning for a afterlife of that? Are you storing some of this money somewhere?
Yes, of course. That's the hardest part, right? And that's the part that I didn't get to quick enough, but I was learning by the end. I'm like, oh, Jesus, I just hit the lotto. I hit the lotto. So I started reading business books, investment books. I'm like, okay, I have to roll this over and, you know, make a legal fortune out of this.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, but I can't really get started until I have like $2 million. You know, $1 million wasn't enough.
You need 1.25.
Nah, $2 million's got the perfect ring to it.
Yeah.
So, but the thing about like, and I'm sure, you know, big organizations understand this. You have to start cleaning money immediately.
Yeah.
Like you can't, or you have to get out of the game and then start cleaning it up. Depends how much help you have. If you are like, oh, hear me go snitching. If you're like, you know, the organization out of Culiacan, Sinaloa, you know, they're washing money every day because they have, you know, help.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't have a lot of help.
Well, they have, they've diversified and they have been diversified for years. So they have garment industry, legal pot industry. Right. They have a bunch of ways to basically put their
real estate, trucking. So it's constantly moving.
But you're just you.
Yeah. I didn't like, I hired people to help me with the product, but I didn't really trust anybody when it came to like
money.
You know what I mean? Because again, and these are the limitations of being in a first world country. You know, the cartel has the real threat of violent death that they can use. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like a real, and that's kind of how you have to enforce it.
Yeah.
Because what's left if you don't have the courts?
I mean, they can't. Yeah, that's the only way they can.
So I'm like, I can't trust this real estate guy with $100,000. I mean, I towards the end, I actually was about to make a pretty dope money play. I kind of figured it out, but it fell through. I could tell you about it if you're interested.
Sure, I mean, sure.
But okay, so 2010 is we're feasting. I mean, it's like, it's
Navidad.
Yeah, it's Navidad. 2010 was Navidad.
Christmas.
Yeah. And so, again, you know, this is, we're on pace to hit like 1.5 in a year just through mailing pot. Okay. So
close to two.
Yeah. That's so what do you do with that? You're 24 years old. You don't have any expenses. You don't have any responsibilities. But I'm reading, you know, the science of getting rich, get rich or die trying. What was the one, Robert Kiyosaki? Help me out here.
Yeah, the guy got
rich. Yeah. Rich dad, poor dad, all that bullshit. Yeah. Right?
He's broke as shit now. Apparently, right now.
Yeah. We can talk about that. But so I was down in Colombia doing a bunch of traveling. I made a couple of plays down there. You know, I moved some coke down there, made some connections. But I met a guy who wanted to sell me a piece of land in around Cartagena, which is, and dude, Colombia was on the poised to blow up, to become this huge, I call it the Cabo of the South.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It was right on the brink. We were there at the perfect time because it wasn't gringo and disgusting and just, you know, European Americanized, but it was a lot safer. They'd moved on from the past and I knew it was about to pop. So I'm like, fucking, I'm going to buy a piece of land and either just sit on it and then sell it wholesale, you know, at like $100,000 markup to a real estate developer, or I'll build it myself. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it was a really, really prime piece of real estate. And so through a money launderer, and this is what this guy did. And he was sharp, like fucking wore $1,000 suits in sweltering Colombian heat, right? Like, but no hair was out of place on his head. I'm like, this is a fucking movie character. So he was like, basically, we're going to buy it for you, but you're going to bring our guys in Queens, New York, $400,000. Right. So you never have to get your cash either into a bank.
Better than Cash App.
We'll do all that.
It's better than Cash App.
Once he has the money, he'll let us know and we will buy it with our money already in Colombia. So that was the play I was going to make.
Solid.
But he ended up getting killed.
Well, it happens.
Yeah. How wild is that? So that's the closest I came to like a brush up
to your afterlife.
Yeah.
Basically a way out of this.
Right. Also like violence. Like, that was the closest I came to, like...
A guy that you were talking to about buying a property all of a sudden doesn't answer the phone because he got fucking probably Uzi'd on the side of a road somewhere, probably.
So check this out. I was hooking up with his niece, who I just talked to the other day on Facebook. She's doing great. She's in... she runs a business with her husband in the States, and, you know, she's
fine.
She's fine. Okay. But her father was also... Probably, you know, he knew the president, really, really connected. And yeah, his brother, I don't know what happened, but he probably just fucked up somebody's money.
Yeah.
And so he was leaving their gated house, like in these really like glitzy suburbs in the, you know, Las Afueras of Cartagena. And just some guy came by with an Uzi and just sprayed him.
Yeah. I'd say Uzi because that's the way. Like, there's a book I read recently about a guy who describes that he invented this Uzi method of killing people in Colombia on the back of a motorcycle.
Was it Popeye?
No, it wasn't Popeye. Popeye, well, there's stories about him, I guess. But there was a guy, there was an older guy that used to work under that, the Medellin organization. And he would listen to cumbia music as he would plan his hits. And he would time them to the music. So if it takes me longer than this song to make it across this place, to shoot this guy and go off, that's how we would time it. Every now and then I put Colombian cumbia music on my post on Instagram. People didn't know it comes from that guy.
Wow.
That's a way to time your hits. Anyway.
Wow. Oh, so it wasn't just mythical and spiritual. This was actually a practical way to see if you're going to get away or not.
Instead of looking at your watch, which is suspicious,
right?
And having his headphones on, listen to some specific music so he can time everything.
Right.
Weirdo. Wow. Pretty cool dude. I mean, pretty cool story about him.
Yeah.
You finally get caught up.
Yeah. So I'm not able to make that money laundering play. I'm hide money everywhere I can, dude, but it's
like tough. Safety deposit monsters?
I mean, yeah, I got you know, a couple hundred thousand in under my brother's name in a safety deposit box. I got $100,000 buried in my parents' garden, you know, really. Stereotypes.
I mean where else could you hide money? It's like
it's way too bulky
on your mattress.
You know, I should have been buying gold. You know, there's all these things you could have been doing, but I was too young.
Hindsight is 2020.
You know, I had hundreds of thousands in parked cars sitting in long-term parking, but then, you know, I always kept $500,000 at my apartment wherever I was at.
A go bag.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So actually I didn't even consider that my get the fuck out of town money. I had that stashed elsewhere. So I just liked to have $500,000 in cash on me.
Just in case you need to run.
Because I like
a good start. Yeah, that's a good start.
It helps me sleep good. It helps me sleep good at night.
It's a pretty good way.
And I would just rent, you know, short-term apartments that were already furnished, like really nice, you know, downtown Portland overlooking the water. Just pay cash in a deposit and would just walk in with a suitcase and my money, and that's how I lived. You know what I mean? So it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun. Very isolating, but it was fun.
When you say isolating, is it because you're doing things, making moves, making plays, but it's a lonely life.
It's
though.
Totally a lonely life. Because you can't really share that with anybody.
No, you shouldn't.
No.
Significant others showing up in your life and you're like, yeah, cool, but there's no fucking way you're gonna tell.
No, I can't let
you
in.
What was your cover story that you would use? Like,
I didn't even have an effective cover story for my parents, which is part of the reason that I didn't buy anything flashy. I would tell them, because it was 2010 was still, the economy was still shitty. So, you know, I would say I was like working in marketing. I would say, you know, I was waiting tables, right? Like, they didn't know shit. Yeah. So my parents knew. My parents would always, like, they were always aware that something was up. Like, dude, in college, I'd be home for the summer, and like my dad would be like, hey, your mom was cleaning your room, and we found $50,000 in cash in your backpack. So, like, you can't, we can't have you living here. So they would just kick me out for the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fucking bananas. But we got caught up, you know, eventually, of course. That
What was the mistake?
The mistake was, you know, the mistake ultimately was not trusting enough people to not have a kind of evidence on you, that kind of cash, But, you know, I don't think there was much of a mistake made because it was not my fault.
Yeah.
I had a package of money that was being sent to me from New Jersey. So I was dealing with my two main distributors at this point were some Dominicans from Washington Heights, Manhattan, uptown Manhattan. That's their turf. Huge drug traffickers. And I love those guys. Those are fucking drug dealing pros. Like, I'd be like, all I got is 30 pounds. They're like, well, all you got is 30? Like, we already have these sold. I could never get them enough. You know what I mean? I love that. Real friendly, super, super thorough. Because, again, these are fucking half black guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I got the target on them. But then I was also dealing with, like, some suburban, you know, we'll call them, like, offspring of, like, mob guys in South Jersey, Philly area, right?
Okay.
Good guys, but they were like, and they were moved. They were real good movers, but they were kind of pill heads, and they were a little sloppy. Sometimes I would open a package of money they sent me, and like it wouldn't have even been like wrapped properly. So these, you know, I got $20,000 smell, just reeking of blunt smoke and coke. You know what I mean? I'm like, guys, you gotta wrap my money like I package your dope.
Yeah.
Because this is a part of the law enforcement strategy, so is money interdiction.
That's how you were kind of like gauging who they were just by how they would send their money.
Yeah, yeah. So that's exactly what happened. So they were sending a package. I think it had $37,000 was the discovery. And some dog hit on it in a FedEx sorting facility, I think in Memphis, which is where the distribution hub is.
Did they, let me guess, they put a transponder in there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they tracked it to, excuse me, they tracked it, you know, they just followed it to Portland where I picked it up, and, you know, the undercovers were waiting for me. So they were able to locate, but they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
They didn't know shit. They're like, what the, and they where do you live? Where do you live? Wouldn't tell them where I lived, clammed up. You know, I had another package of money that I just picked up that had like another 50 grand. So they were like, who the fuck are you? You know?
Yeah.
And then they finally, dude, they located where I live because I just purchased the first iPhone.
Oh.
And they were able to trace where I had been, and I had no idea.
Did they make you open the phone or did they crack it?
I think they... That's a good question. I might have opened it for him. I think I fucked up. I was like, I don't have shit to hide.
I ask you because if it was the first iPhone, I got to experience some of that on my end by
really
talking to people as far as phones.
Well, did you have? Was there even a login back then? Was there even a passcode? I don't think there was. So they had that, but there was nothing on the phone.
Yeah.
So they were able, you know, they had these machines already that they could plug in and see where your phone had been.
We would call them chupones here. This is basically like a rig that they would only be sold to governments, and you connect that thing. We use them for Blackberries.
Right, exactly. So I was like, you motherfuckers, because I knew when they were asking all these questions, I'm like, I knew they didn't know anything.
Yeah.
If the feds come to get you and they say, Mitchell, come with us, you know you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know they have everything they need. I'm like, okay, all they have is cash. They don't know where I live. But, you know, they were able to, they plugged in the chipone, and it took them hours because they had to call, get a warrant. They were like, we're going to ransack the house. All the neighbors are going to know if you don't let us. And I'm like, you guys, you got to get the, I can't, you're going to have to get the warrant. I'm sorry. I'm not, I don't know what you're talking about. Which I'm glad I made them do the work, you know? Yeah. But, and, you know, and then they found another half, you know, they found my $500,000 in cash in my apartment. And so first thing I did was, because there were no feds, these weren't the DEA, these were local shitheads. One of them who was at the first bust the year and a half, 2 years before that.
So like a local federal task force type thing.
Not federal at all. It was an arm of the Portland Police Department. It was the Drugs and Vice Squad. Okay. Undercovers. Detectives, right? Yeah. There was so of course, you know, we're sitting in there. They haven't even called. Nobody's there but us, but three of them and me. And I'm like, okay, take this cash. Let me run.
Yeah, just take it.
Yeah, just take it. I'm not saying you just got to let me go. You could say I got away. Put the APB out, put the warrant out, because I knew where my get-the-fuck-out-of-town cash was. But they didn't go for it. So that pissed them off. And, you know, at the end of the day, they had, like, you know, over $600,000 in, cash. And there was, you know, they walked out with a couple Ziploc bags full of cell phone, you know, bat phones. And, you know, they had some packaging material. They didn't have any product, though. They didn't have any work. So.
So just, yeah. So just communication and money.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, you know, they took me in and I had to fight my case from the inside because I was on probation. So I didn't have, I wasn't able to bond out.
What was the charge?
Well, they hit me with everything at first. Money laundering, tax evasion, conspiracy to commit drug trafficking, bribery. Bribery. I'm like, you fucking Boy Scouts, you fucking white boys, pussies. If you had been Mexicans, you'd be on your new fishing boats right now.
Come on, come on.
Italians even.
Baby.
Irish.
I don't know. I don't know anything about that. I don't have a boat. That's all I'm going to say. You got hit with what stuck?
So, again, I had a very well-paid lawyer, awesome, which is one of the few, you know, really good
smart
things I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were like, look, there's, you got no product. You have no, you know, because they were, you know, they send everybody every day, it seemed like, you know, and somebody else from the DEA would come down. Mitchell, you got a visitor. Bring me into the room. Look, man, just bring us to them. You know what I mean? Like, this is silly. You don't want to go down for this, right? And I'm just like, nah, I can't. Because my lawyer was like, look, you're going to cooperate until they say till they say you don't have to. And they don't have products. So let's make them a proffer. Bring them to the rest of your money. Right?
Yeah.
Because that's the other question. Where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
And bring them the rest of your money, and then we can squeeze in a pretty favorable plea deal. So I didn't give them everything, but I turned over another 400. So now we're looking at an even million in cash, and didn't give up anybody. They didn't have anything, you know. So pretrial motions, you're able to, you know, dismiss a lot of the charges and, you know, end up getting 36 months. Yeah.
30, you're in county probably during all of this.
I'm fighting my case the whole time from inside of jail, which is torture. It's torture.
Like that's a whole different world.
It's a whole different world. And it's like, they're taking their time. My lawyer is like, they're going to take their time because they want to squeeze you. That is a tactic of the DA or the U.S. attorney. Depends if you've got a Fed case. Yeah. They were like, we're going to leave you in there to suffer until you're ready to play ball. So he's like, you just got to hang on.
I mean, I don't know anything about this, but I think your paperwork looks fine for that, right? Mm-hmm. Or do you have any issues in there?
Mm-mm.
Any questions on why you're there?
No.
I mean, you would look fine on paper.
But I got my paperwork. So it's like, shit, here, let me see your paperwork. I got my paperwork. So I think a lot of people actually respected that. They see the level of crime and they're like, okay, so he's not a gangbanger. He's not a pussy, but he's definitely not, he's not hard, but he's intelligent. So I think we're going to, you know, we're not going to abuse him, but I had to fight.
Yeah.
There's no question. I mean,
you're tall.
I am tall. I had that. I'm not a small guy.
You can punch down probably at a bunch of these fuckers or just hold them off. They can't reach you.
Yeah. But I mean, I wish it were that easy.